This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. The Shed, according to New Hampshire author Howard Mansfield, is above all practical. It is, he says, the shortest line between need and shelter. The structure itself seems like the essence of New England, and the simple design of a shed, the plain walls, doors only where they're necessary, the pitched roof, reappears in covered bridges, barns, old homes, meeting houses. In his new book, aptly named Sheds, Howard Mansfield teams up with photographer Joanna Eldridge Morrissey to showcase this element of New England architecture and explain why we are so drawn to these old structures. For this interview, I could not resist getting out of the studio and taking a tour of some sheds and barns and covered bridges, so I headed over to Howard's home in Hancock, New Hampshire. Thank you very much for showing me all about sheds.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Tell us where we are now and where we're headed.
We're going to go look at our barn. It used to be attached to the house, which is a very common thing to have buildings moved around. In the 19th century, they moved buildings all over the landscape. In fact, they moved the meeting house in town here back about 50 or 100 feet. And this was, of course, all before gasoline, diesel, big machinery. So they would do it with levers, pulleys, logs, oxen, and a lot of rum. And I want to show you this because this is a very typical shed, and it's very typical of how sheds change over time and continue to serve us like that.
All right, let's go see it.
I wanted to tell you first, there's a couple of key points why we wrote about sheds. Sheds are buildings in which beauty and utility are one. In this era of McMansions, they have some important lessons to teach us about living well. And one of those is that it's the simple that lasts from generation to generation. And as you look around, you see this whole history emerge, a history that we can't really know a lot about. An animal, probably a horse, lived here. You can see how he's chewed or crib this particular support to the barn. Back there, you can see there was a stall for a horse, and you can see where he had hoofed his hooves had dug a hole there. You can see way up top where those notches are, there was a hayloft there, that's gone. You can see that this part here was built probably out of old lumber from another shed.
Make that connection a little more explicit for me, the connection between sort of living simply, living well, and the actual structure of this particular barn.
Okay, sure. Well, most of the buildings we see in magazines are very fancy kind of buildings. They're very polished, they're very slick. A lot of the things we see, say, on cable TV shows where they run in and they rip out, they knock down 14 walls. They put in one of those islands the size of an aircraft carrier covered with, you know, enough granite, you know, to build a monument to Washington, and all sorts of stainless steel appliances. And we tend to think, well, maybe that's it. That's what it's about.
But life, you mean? That's what life's about,
yeah,
getting
life
the stuff.
Or living houses should be about. But really, a lot of the places that we're most happy in are places that have evolved over time, have a little bit of today in them, a little bit of yesterday, a little bit of the day before in them. And they have this kind of permeability, this openness to the outside. They have different amounts of enclosure. So in barns, depending on what it was used for, they're always a bit open to the day.
In essence, though, it's the story of the development of New England, people building things not out of a desire to see something pretty, but to survive.
By nature and by religion, the first white settlers were very direct people. I mean, their religion as Puritans was very simple, very stripped down, and the climate demanded you got down the business very seriously and got yourself undercover, protected from snow, water, heat. If you look at the early meeting houses, they were not painted white. They didn't have spires, they didn't have stained glass, they didn't have clocks, they didn't have anything fancy. They were basically a barn with an altar and some pews in it. That's it. They didn't have heat. They weren't even painted. They were very simple. Over time, they've gotten more church-like, and yet still their simplicity still lives on if you go into most of them.
All right, what else should we go see?
Okay, let's go out and see the covered bridge that's on the town line between Hancock and Greenfield to talk about the appeal of covered bridges to people and what I think is the true appeal of them.
All right, let's go see a covered bridge.
So let's go take a walk through the bridge. Here's the thing about covered bridges. People love them. They keep the nostalgia mills going. There's always calendars of covered bridges, people who tour around to see them. All this kind of nostalgic talk of the sounds of the horse's hoofbeats as it goes through, or stealing a kiss from your best girl in the darkness, or how spooky it was and dark at night. But I think what's really going on is it reawakens people's sense of space, their sense of enclosure. it's like being in a treehouse, because when you go into the covered bridge, you're enclosed, but at the same time, you're suspended over the river. And usually you can see out through the sides, through the windows, or the trusses themselves. So you get this sense where you're hiding out and you're looking out. There's an English geographer, Jay Appleton, and he has this theory that places that appeal to us have prospect and refuge. In other words, we're protected, but we can see. Going back to the African savanna, we could look out. Is that animal coming to eat me, or am I going to eat it? Is that kith or kin, or is that an enemy? So prospect and refuge. And so when you go through a good covered bridge, it reawakens that sense. And basically, in the important point, one of the important points is it's a shed. It was not built to be on a calendar. The roof is there to protect the trusses, that what's holding the bridge up, those little X's you see scissoring by. So what you have is pure utility that became picturesque, became beautiful, and became appreciated by many people. So much so that when this bridge was washed out in the great flood of 1936, people insisted that it be rebuilt. Back in 1936, when there was not much money around to do anything. And this is a very simple bridge. It's not open at the sides. It's very short. But it's definitely a part of New England.
Do we need covered bridges now, though? Do bridges require a covering like they used to?
No, we don't need covered bridges. We don't need anything beautiful. What we need is some way to get out of the rain and get out of the sun and, 1,200 calories a day? Someone can correct me. That's what we need. But to really live and be happy, we need more than that. So that's the need question. But that's a very good New England question. What do we need? Let's be practical, which takes you right back to the early meeting house, which you got down stripped to totally to essentials, you know? Mm-hmm. What did you need to worship? What did you need? You needed a box to sit in for 6-8 hours and be with God. That was it. You didn't need a spire.
Well, the question comes from, I mean, we've been talking about utility and practicality, and at one point in history, like, all of the parts of this covered bridge were required, but now they've become 0% ornamental to almost 100% ornamental.
Yeah, I mean, if you replace it today, they would take a measurement. They'd have some probably prefab concrete or steel, probably steel girders. They'd come and measure it. They'd drop it in a day or two. A little guardrail you go across, you wouldn't really think about it, and we wouldn't be standing here either.
There's a noticeable change in you, Howard, when you are in a structure like this.
Oh, really?
Well, you just seem much more happy and just bright and cheerful while you're here. What do you think accounts for that? Do you really love these places that much?
That's interesting. I don't know. I do. I do. I like looking around, and I like looking around at all old buildings and new buildings too. And I like trying to figure out, what are we really feeling here? What are we responding here? Have you ever walked into a room and you just felt spooked immediately, or you just felt, I had to get out of here?
Yeah.
So what, now, of all the hundreds or maybe thousands of visual cues you're getting, sound cues, smells, vibrations, there's one or two things that told you that before you were even conscious of it. What was that? Sometimes you walk into a room, you're very happy, it's very obvious. There's sunlight, there's flowers, you know, someone's cooking a good meal, very obvious cues. And sometimes you walk into a place, you say, this just feels right. The architect Christopher Alexander calls it the quality without a name. What is that quality? How close can you get to defining that? And he says in his book, A Timeless Way of Building, the search for this quality without a name is a search that defines most people's lives. They're looking for that. And it's those moments when we're most alive. That's what he says. And I think that's pretty darn good.
Well, Howard, thank you very much for telling me all about sheds in New England architecture.
Thank you, Peter. You're a very good tour participant.
This has been fun. That's Howard Mansfield. His new book is Sheds. And you can find a list of the top 5 books on Howard's bookshelf at nhpr.org. And we're always looking for reading recommendations from listeners like you, so send them our way by email, books@nhpr.org, or you can send us a tweet at nhprbookshelf. This is The Bookshelf from NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thanks very much for listening.